Hey, everybody, this is Harvey Sluggo Wasserman gathering for our 55th, count them, 55 gatherings of the Grassroots Emergency Election Protection Coalition, where we cover the incredibly important terrain of protecting our elections and promoting what is left of our democracy. It's great to see everyone on here in the middle of the summer, but boy, the action is fast and furious. I want to welcome my listeners at the Progressive Radio Network, my Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. I have my Solartopia shirt on, and it's good to see all you magnificent people. We have 43 people on the call so far, and we have a very packed agenda. We're going to talk a major development, probably the most important development in the United States in the last week or so, is a apparent willingness of Joe Manchin to bend on the election protection law, HB 1, now Senate Bill 1, the For the People Act, which he has been opposing, but now has come out with some reasonable amendments or changes, which may help the bill get through, or at least parts of it. I want to discuss in some detail what he's proposing. It's a lot of stuff that we're very familiar with in terms of our cause, and some of it is quite welcome. We also want to talk about the march with Charles Moreland at the end of August that we're building our agenda, and Charles has been on the case getting permits. We have Ray and Gloria to talk about the ongoing Georgia Miracle Project, Ray McClendon and Georgia Gloria Tinubu. We have Ray Lutz gonna give us some stuff. I mean, the stuff from Arizona, you can't make up. My understanding now is that they have moved the ballots from Arizona to Montana. That's interesting. A major first in American electoral history, I think. There's also a lot going on with gerrymandering. Manchin is a big opponent of gerrymandering. And there are a number, there's some conflict going on in some of the states where they're, the Democrats, as usual, are failing to deal with the issue the way it needs to be dealt with. And some really alarming news, and we've posted the New York Times article in the chat. It was also in the invitation I sent out about the extent to which the repression is going on in the various states, removing local election officials, for God's sakes, legislatures passing bills, basically arrogating the right to decide elections. I mean, it's truly astounding and something that we need to discuss in great detail. I also want to talk about the detail of the requirement for addresses applying for a ballot. And Tatanka Brick is with us from the indigenous community. Of course, in the indigenous, mostly they have post boxes, which are not allowed. And we also have issues with the homeless people who are unable to register because they don't have addresses either, something with which James Fukuda is quite familiar. James, you're about to get a new mayor in New York. Any ideas? Give him any money on any of these candidates?
It's my belief it's going to be Eric Adams.
Really? Okay. Well, let's hope he's decent on election protection anyway. Okay, so let's start. Mike Fox of Progressive Democrats of America has asked for 5 minutes to tell us what he's doing. And then we're going to go to New York with Julie Wiener to find out what's going on with the legislation there. And then we're going to jump in with Joe Manchin. Mike Fox, you don't really need that mask, I don't think, but.
Actually, yeah, I do, Harvey, and here's why. I unfortunately live with a person who is really high risk and refuses to get vaccinated. So I'm keeping all stops, you know, any precautions whatsoever. But all right, thank you for your concern.
We will hear from you. Let's do it.
All right, brother. I certainly appreciate it. Just a clarification. I'm not only the Deputy Executive Director of Progressive Democrats of America, representing them here, but likewise, I'm representing one of the largest coalitions we've ever been involved in. It goes under the banner of Declaration for American Democracy. It's got all the major players in it. Just a few, there's over 180, but some of the players include Public Citizen, Move On, Democracy for America, Common Cause, Indivisible, SEIU, CWA, Color Exchange, Credo, Daily Coast, Sierra Club, People's Action, and Citizens United, and even our sister at Code Pink. So
you need to, Mike, let me jump in. You need to be in contact with Charles Moreland of the DC Statehood Movement, and you need to be a part of our August rally in DC. So please exchange contacts if you haven't already with Charles Moreland.
Yeah, and thank you for that, Harvey. And my contact info is going to be dropped into. In fact, it just got dropped in, it looks like it did. Thank you, Mike Hirsch. My contact information is in the chat as we speak there. So let's just very quickly go through seven different actions, literally here, that we're focusing on the For the People Act. And absolutely pummeling Manchin and Sinema and a couple of other folks in this process. So we'd originally anticipated that that Schumer was going to drop this on Wednesday, the 23rd. It looks like it's going to be tomorrow now. So job number one is call or email your senators. Right now as we speak, if you can go on mute and type in an email, contact them right now. It looks like the For the People Act is going to hit the floor tomorrow, okay? So that's job number one, contact your senator. In your message, you may want to include, I don't know how this group feels about it, but some folks are including in there, if the filibuster gets in the way of the passage of the For the People Act, then dump the filibuster. Make that a part of your message as well, okay? Then the second way that you can get active is if you're in Tennessee, Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, West Virginia, Virginia, or DC, we ask that you show solidarity with the Black Voters Matter folks who are doing what they call a freedom ride. There's a bus going to all of those states. If you click on the link in there, blackvotersmattersfund.org/freedomride, click on that. It will show you all the cities where those are taking place over the upcoming week. Okay. Now, number three, all over the country, you can join a Deadline for Democracy event near you. There was 132 of them as of this morning. There will be hundreds of these across the country. The core focus is for events to be from the 28th to the 10th. However, if you want to do something sooner than that, feel free to start an event on your own. There are two links there in the chat. You can either sign up for an event that's currently established, or if there isn't something currently established in your area, anchor one, and we'll be more than happy to hold your hand through that process and make sure that your event is a success. You email me at mikefox@pdamerica.org if you want to anchor your own, and we'll take you by the hand and make it happen. Okay, so thus far we're saying, number one, make calls and email today. Number two, if you're in Tennessee, Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, West Virginia, Virginia, or DC, jump on board with the Freedom Ride events that are in that link posted. Number three, everybody, if everybody can just show up to one of those events in the street, there's a massive movement here. At the very least, it would be a great opportunity for you to connect with other great progressives in your area. Bring a clipboard with you. But bottom line, we're looking for a gazillion events across the country. The next, okay. And we still got a couple more if I can finish. So just real quick, if you're not into doing the public thing right now, get on the phone. We're calling folks in West Virginia, in Arizona, and if we get through all of those calls, then we'll start hitting Feinstein, because she is she's showing an indication that she won't move on the filibuster. So, but the primary target right now is Manchin and Sinema, those two. So the good news is Sinema has come on board with the bill, but it doesn't matter. It ain't going to pass as we speak. So, and it ain't going to pass with Manchin's suggestions either at this point. He's only got eight. He's got eight Republicans. That's it. So that's why this coalition has suggested we're going to pile on hard for the People Act, just simply because it's got momentum. Don't turn off of that. The recess will take place. Pound, 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 pound on them about For the People Act and dump the filibuster during that process. And then when Schumer comes back, if we do our job, he's willing to bring it back up again and see if he's got the votes as a result of our work. So if you want to, like I said, jump on a phone, email me at mikefox@pdamerica.org. You will be calling PDA members in West Virginia and Arizona to begin with, and we're nudging them to contact their senator, get involved in events locally, blah, 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 all right? And then finally, there's a filibuster DC rally on Thursday, June 24th at noon at the Supreme Court. So if you're anywhere near DC, pile on that if you can. And lastly, any questions whatsoever about either the We the People Act or the movement on the John Lewis bill or DC statehood? I show 100% solidarity with DC statehood already, brother. Obviously, we got to get them. We got to get them statehood. Those are going to be Democrats. Those would be Democrats. There's no question. So we're also involved in that. But for right now, if we can stay focused on the We the People Act, pummeling, Manchin and all of our senators, whipping votes, and likewise reinforcing in the filibuster in that process. And if you have any questions, MikeFox@pdamerica.org, MikeFox@pdamerica.org. Thank you for the time, Harvey. I appreciate
stay with us, please. That was great. Much appreciated. Ruth Strauss has a hand. I wanted to ask you real quick, Mike, are you doing anything on the John Lewis Act? Where does the John Lewis Act fit into this?
Yeah, where it fits in is if folks want to include that in their call, that's fine. There's not 100% solidarity amongst the coalition on including that in messaging, just simply because they're afraid that it'll get too fragmented. The coalition feels that the core of this is the For the People Act, people understand it, they know about it, et cetera, et cetera. Folks on this call know about the John Lewis Act, most definitely, but unfortunately, the average American doesn't. So that's why the core push is the For the People. If somebody on this call wants to include in their outreach work on the Lewis bill, please do, by all means.
Okay, Ruth Strauss, you got a hand?
Well, that was one of the things I was just going to suggest when you call your senators to say if the For the People doesn't pass, then that you also support the voting rights one. My question is, what are we supposed to do with Sinema and Manchin? I mean, we're not their constituents, so can you explain what we're supposed to do there?
Sure. Here's my response to we're not their constituents. Is the best case scenario when you contact them that you're a constituent? Yes. However, I would submit that every federal elected official runs at large today. Bottom line, if you from outside of their state wanted to cut a check to their campaign, they would take it. So, and
good point.
Yes, and by virtue of the fact that the way that senator votes affects your life wherever you are in a vote this type. So my best suggestion is call after hours. Then there's nobody who will ask you, so are you a constituent? Just leave the message. I'm a concerned citizen. He better vote right. She better vote right. Boom, done deal.
Okay.
And then likewise, get on board if folks want to make phone calls, get on board with our outreach to their constituents, who then in turn will get active.
All right. So this is a great push. Your rally at the Supreme Court is this coming Thursday, 3 days away. I hope you're in touch with Charles Moreland and the other folks with the DC statehood movement to build that.
Not my rally, Harvey.
What's that?
I said, not my rally. I'm just pushing it.
All right. Well, Charles, you may want to be in touch with Mike here and get in touch with those people who are doing this thing. That'd be really good.
Yep.
And they'll come to our rally at the end of August. Justin LeBlanc, you have a hand?
Yes. So I work in some of the bill reviews and elections integrity reviews. Like I'd say election protection reviews, really, in this case now, the way things have become. And so my statement to follow up on what you're saying, Mike, is anybody who's on the fence about HR 1 in terms of its content should really look at the context and say, the states are not holding back from redefining what is a voter and basically removing people's right to vote.
Amen.
And so the HR 1 really is the first of what needs to be a whole campaign of federal pushes to actually make democracy truly democracy rather than just in favor of the modern landowner.
Okay.
Amen, brother. If I can pile on, and if I can pile on to that, you bring up a
point. Wait, Mike. Yeah. Mike, I'm going to ask you to hold for 1 minute because I want to get a report from Julie in New York and she's got to go. And then we'll come right back to you. But I do want to make sure we get this report from Julie Wiener. So good. Julie, give us the flash here and tell us what's going on in New York and then we'll go back.
Yeah, I just posted the basics. It's up now, one note in the chat. So the New York State Legislature closed down for the year on June 12th without passing a number of bills. In the assembly neglected to put on the agenda for a vote many, many important bills, and included were two that passed the New York State Senate, which is the hybrid ban bill that now with its amendments, it not only bans hybrid voting machines that can print over ballots after they're cast, it also bans ballots that use thermal paper, in other words, disappearing ink ballots. And it also, which the Express Vote Excel that's about to be certified because this failed to pass does. It also bans voting machines that use barcodes that voters can't verify to count the ballots. So we're in, the fact that this didn't pass puts New York State at great risk of having to, of a terrible setback. We've been voting on hand-marked paper ballots since 2008. We were the state that resisted the pressure from HAVA to go with electronic voting machine, you know, to go with touch screens. And we won hand-marked paper ballots. We established the use of simple scanners, and now it's all being reversed. We've got now 28 counties that are using the Dominion ICE, which even though it can accept hand-marked paper ballots, you can't be sure that your ballot, which goes under the printer after you cast it, it doesn't get, you know, if it's hacked, it could get printed over. But now there's an even worse one we're fearing the certification of, which is the ESNS Express Vote Excel. I don't know if any of you remember the disaster in Philadelphia where it completely inaccurately counted and claimed to have been able to save the day by counting the ballots, but it's a universal use ballot marking device. So everybody has to vote through a touch screen. So there goes New York's hand-marked paper ballots. Anyway, there were two bills. Sorry, there's the hybrid ban bill, A1115A, that passed, the Senate version passed. The assembly didn't bother before they went home voting on it. And then there's also a very important bill that would give New York what many other states have, which is a second path to 100% hand count. Almost all states in close votes have an automatic hand count. New York just got that at the beginning of this year, if in a very close election. So we now will have a right to 100% hand count in a close election, but there's no other path to 100% hand count. So if a candidate fears that an election was miscounted, they would have to prove it to the judge before they can get a recount. The bill that we passed the Senate clarifies that ballot images are public documents subject to freedom of information access by candidates or and by voters. And the assembly didn't put it on the agenda. That would be A829A to clarify that ballot images are public documents subject to FOIL. There was a terrible New York State appeals court decision that overturned lower courts and decided that these are not public documents. They can just be kept secret. So that has to get fixed by the legislature. And we're hearing stories that that there are some legislators that don't like it because it might delay the counting of the ballots if they have to answer FOIL requests 5 days after the election. But the reality is that our purpose of it is to give candidates the right to take a look and count for themselves whether there was a miscount, so they could prove to a judge that they deserve a recount.
And so is this all going to come up again in the fall?
Well, there is no scheduled legislature in New York State until January.
Oh my God.
There is a slight, our legislature is a half a year job. However, except for campaigning, there is a possibility that the legislature may get called back into session for a couple of bills on prison, the health of senior prisoners. And the right to a parole hearing. So it's possible that the legislature will be called back in. We do not know yet whether, if the legislature does go back to work, whether they'll work on any other bills than the one or two that they're officially being called in. We're hoping so. So we are now reaching out to voters and asking them to call their legislators to demand a vote and passage of the hybrid ban bill and the clarification that ballot images are subject to FOIL. Right. I put the numbers in the chat. So we're hoping that we have a chance to vote on it. If not, we're going to have to go county by county to try and persuade election commissioners not to buy dangerous hybrid voting machines. Oh, I also put in the chat the really important webinar tomorrow on the dangers of universal use ballot marking devices. So there's that free speech for people, today's electronic voting machines link. I urge people, it's from 1 to 5 New York time, so that 1, 12, 11, so it's 10 a.m. Tomorrow Pacific time. If you can possibly make any of it, try and catch it. It's really important on these, really important expose by national experts from all different points of view, legal point of view, electronics point of view, security point of view, of the universal use ballot marking devices. So if you can be there, please join us for that.
Thank you very much, Julie. That's really an important report. We really appreciate it. Mike, thanks for standing back. We have 54 people on the call. Danette, did you want to say something? And then Marla?
Yeah, just really quick. I had a question about the whole debacle in Arizona, them taking the ballots up to Montana.
We're going to talk about that in a bit, okay? Ray Letts is on with us.
Sounds good.
Okay. Marla, did you have a hand?
Yeah, Julie really answered my question. I was wondering about the possibility of the legislature being called back into session. That's all.
I hope so. Okay. Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Julie. We appreciate you jumping in. We'll see you in 2 weeks to get an update on what's going on. Okay. Anybody else have a question about New York? This is a pretty big deal. I mean, it's a good thing that we have this legislation. God knows we need it, and it's a shame it didn't pass right away, but we'll come back to it. Mike Hirsch, Mike Fox, do you want to continue with what you're doing here? And we'll take questions for you, and then we're going to move into what Joe Manchin is and is not doing here. Mike Hirsch, go ahead. Mike Fox, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Harvey. Just if anybody has any questions, let me know. I don't want to dominate this call by any stretch. I know you got a lot going on. But if you could, anybody just type into the chat. I'd like to get a feel for what kind of activity I've generated. So if you just type in the chat, if you're actually going to do any of the 6 things that I laid out there, I know Lynn has already emailed her senators. And thank you so much, Lynn. So anybody else, please. Thank you, Mike Hirsch. There's the reminder, everybody. Just type in here if you're actually going to be doing something. I'll take questions, then I'll get out of your hair.
Well, it's a great thing that you're doing here. Let's hope it has an impact. You know, we're all in on it, on this bill. But I don't see anybody having a hand. I want to segue in. Falabi, good to see you from Greenpeace. Thank you for joining in. We tried to reach you earlier. If you can connect with Charles Moreland from the DC Statehood Movement as soon as possible, that would be great. So in terms of Senate Bill, I guess it's Senate Bill 1 now. Am I missing somebody?
Yeah, Charles Moreland.
Oh, Charles Moreland, go ahead. Yes, Charles, please.
Yeah, I just want to say straight out that Mike Fox is absolutely right. Mike, we appreciate your energy. Listen, the key to dealing with Joe Manchin, as far as I can see, the easiest and best way to deal with him is pass the DC Statehood Bill. DC Statehood will give us two senators who we know are going to be Democratic, liberal, and progressive. And that would allow the Democrats to get rid of the filibuster without any fear. And that would stop Joe Manchin from holding democracy hostage, which is what he's doing. Take away his power. Because right now we don't have 50 Democrats where they ought to be. With the DC Statehood Bill, we will. Okay, and that's one of the reasons why progressives and people all over the country are mobilizing behind the DC Statehood Bill. It's low-hanging fruit. It historically has been an issue that Democrats and Republicans both have supported. So we see it as low-hanging fruit around which everybody can organize. And once we get DC Statehood, then all these other great bills, we know they're gonna pass.
Mike, you got a dimension in your campaign here for DC Statehood?
Yes, actually, 100% solidarity, brother. We've been there for years and take great pride in the fact we've been there for years. I would simply ask a concern about timing. That's our only concern here. I show 100% solidarity with you that if we get DC Statehood, we're cooking with gas. There is no question. However, the concern here being, I don't know that I would necessarily share the slam dunk element of that. I don't know that there's a single Republican, and you can shoot me down if you can identify them. I don't know of a single Republican that's on board with DC Statehood. And we all are, most definitely. But in any event, we definitely show solidarity with DC Statehood, and we'll push on that as well. But for right now, our biggest, the deadline that we're looking at here is really substantial, because the deadline for us to get legislation that will prevent the type of filibustering that's going to take place in those state houses all over the country is literally like by the end of July. We have to have that in place or we're done on that issue, because the states need enough lead time to make sure that that does not happen. So with that in mind, we're just pushing hard for the People Act, because it's got that kind of language in it, and for other reasons as well, simply because it's on the tip of people's tongues. But solidarity with DC Statehood all day long.
Okay, and then you got a thing coming up in 3 days. Charles, you guys, Mike, if you can connect Charles with the group that's doing that demo. And
click on the link.
Yep. Falabi is also in DC from Greenpeace. It would be great if you guys can meet on the steps of the Supreme Court, such as it is. Okay, stick with us, Mike. I have a short list of things that Manchin allegedly is agreeing to. One is he wants a national voter ID. And it's not clear to me that this ID is going to be a photo ID. Does anybody know detail about that? He's talking about allowing the use of utility bills to be sufficient for voter ID. I do want to point out, by the way, one of the things that we've brought up on this call is that in Texas, you can get a ballot with a gun license, but not with a student ID. But the governor of Texas, I can barely say this, is now moving to get rid of gun licenses. So anybody can walk around with a gun and not have a gun license. I can't begin to imagine that reality. And I thought I'd put it in the conversation. So is anybody familiar with the kind of ID that Joe Manchin is talking about allowing in a federal ID? Does anybody know any detail? Has anybody seen it? I haven't seen anything about that.
He's just calling for like general utility bills, things like that. They do that in Ohio where you don't have to have a picture ID. You can just bring in a rent statement or specifically, I'm not sure, but just as general categories, something, things like that.
Yes. Well, that would be a big step forward. If you can, you know, Ohio allows like 17 different forms of ID and a lot of them are not, do not have a photo involved. So here's the second part of this. Addresses. Tatanka, you can tell us, you know, in the indigenous, people don't have street addresses, they have PO boxes, and they're disenfranchised in many cases. Is there anything in this bill that gets around that for the indigenous? Do you know, Tatanka? Oh, you're muted.
I don't know that there's anything that gets around it. I know that what they did over 2 years ago, they weren't able to have something like a PO box accepted constitutionally. They just worked around and found family members and all kinds of actual addresses and then worked on get out the vote. So they successfully got people without addresses to put actual addresses that were linked to their community. That's what they were able to do, but it didn't challenge the law.
And it's the same is true with homelessness.
And the same is, you know, I don't know if the homeless union has taken a stand on that. That would be great. They should have a way of voting.
If we have SB1, or, you know, HR1 and SB1, the For the People Act in play, and if Manchin is now moving a little bit to amend the thing, this is a big issue here. If there could be federal clarification on what kind of ID is allowed, and if it's not photo ID that's fully required, that would be a big plus. So Mike, in your work on this bill, we need to take a look at that. Okay, there's another point, and somebody wants to raise their hand, let me know. Howie, we had a big discussion, Howie Hawkins, on the financial aspects of campaign legislation. And you were very much opposed to a lot of things in this bill that had to do with campaign finance. Do we know, has Manchin moved at all in campaign finance?
It's not in his compromise. He just cut the whole section out that we had objections to because it made it much harder for third parties and insurgents in the major parties to get public funding. So if they're voting on Manchin's bill, what I was concerned about is not in it.
So I've seen a lot of hand wringing saying that, oh, he's cut out the campaign finance stuff, but you actually think that's a good thing. Is that right?
From a policy point of view, I do. And from getting the damn thing passed, I do. Because there are a lot of Democrats don't want public campaign finance. They aren't really for that part of the bill. If you want to get voting rights protected, deal with partisan gerrymandering, disclose some of the money that would be the Disclosure Act, as Manchin included that in his version. If you want those things, you try to drag in that public financing proposal and you're going to lose Democratic votes and you're not going to get it passed. So from a strategic point of view, I think that's a good move.
Cool. All right. Justin LeBlanc, you've got a hand on that?
Yes. So I'm in 100% agreement with Howie's assessment of that situation. Additionally, I want to point out that funding for a lot of things regarding elections is in a dearth. And really, we need to be looking less on the campaign finance reform side and more on the side of funding programs such as, well, if you're going to require a voter ID, you should actually, you must as a state provide the means for the voter to get that ID, otherwise it is disenfranchisement. Additionally, along the lines of polling places, we never have enough of those. And especially in inner city areas, there needs to be requirements for funding those. One proposal that I have heard for doing that kind of thing is to tax campaign contributions that are received by candidates for that purpose, both polling places and audits.
Wow, Lynn Fireman? Lynn?
Sorry, couldn't get to my unmuter.
Yeah, you're good.
I totally agree with Howie and Justin. And I'm wondering, I mean, if Manchin has 8 repugnant Likuds, does that mean that we only need one more? Because we've got, 50 plus Kamala, and it comes down to 59. So surely he can find one more repugnant Likud.
I don't know if Kamala can vote if it's not a tie. I don't think she's allowed to vote until there's a tie. I may be wrong about that.
But on the 60, can she vote? You know, on having to have 60 votes. It's 60 votes, right? Do we need, or is it more?
Yeah, but I think that the vice president only votes when it's 50-50.
You're right.
I may be wrong about that.
The vice president only votes in a tie.
Harvey's definitely right about that.
So she wouldn't get to vote to break a filibuster.
So we need 2 more.
2 more Republicans, right. And God help us. I don't know. You know, it occurred to me today that it's not out of the question that the senator from Alaska would become a Democrat, because Trump is opposing her in the, what's her name?
Murkowski,
right. Trump is going after her in the primary. She actually won in a write-in before. I think there's a chance that she might flip and become a Democrat, but it won't be in time for this particular scenario. Okay, he is also calling, he's supporting in the federal bill, which has never been before, 15 days of early voting. That's a big deal. He also, he also is supporting a national holiday. Now, this has been proposed. We proposed that, Bob Fitricus and I proposed that, not that it was originally to us, 15 years ago. And, you know, that in itself is a huge deal. If Election Day is a national holiday, it will have a very substantial impact on working people voting. And so, you know, I want to very much support that. He's also supporting, I'm not exactly sure what the detail is, but he's supporting automatic voter registration. Now, if anybody knows what form that is going to take, that's also a big deal. I assume when you turn 18, my understanding of automatic voter registration is, when you turn 18, you're automatically registered. But maybe somebody else has a different interpretation of that. I don't know. But I'm very glad to see that included. He's also talking about, unfortunately, he leaves in place some limits on voting by mail. I don't know what they are, but we're going to have to look very closely at that. You know, I've only seen generic descriptions saying that this is part of the legislation. Maybe it's better what he's proposing. I don't know. Mike Fox, are you familiar with any of the things that Manchin has done on this particular issue? No? Okay.
Nope.
Mike?
Yeah, no.
Okay. I think we need to look pretty closely on what he's proposing here. He's also talking about nonpartisan redistricting, which would be an end to gerrymandering, which we're all dying for. But his apparent solution is not like the nonpartisan, transparent, grassrootsy commissions that we've got in California and now in Michigan. What apparently he's calling for is a federal apparatus that will use computer models to prevent partisan gerrymandering. But that's a really interesting proposal, and I again do not know the detail. So when we reconvene on July 12th, I think we need to look really closely at what he's got in play here. Clearly, he's been reached. He is not now standing for a blanket rejection of House Bill 1, which is now Senate Bill 1, the For the People Act. What he's calling for has clear amendments that we would strongly support, and also the removal of the egregious campaign finance stuff. So this is stuff we need to look at. Tatanka, and then Howie, and then Justin.
I have a question. Is it still the law that every 18-year-old by law has to register with the Selective Service still?
I don't know that. Does anybody?
I think it is. And if it still is, boy, automatic registration.
Right there, yeah.
I think that just covers men, though.
Yes, there was a big controversy over whether it would include women. And I think at this point, it does not.
Uh-huh.
But it's amazing to me that, you know, whenever I hear Selective Service, I think of Vietnam. It's genetic now. What can I tell you? But we should look into that. Yes, if 18-year-old men are automatically required to register for the Selective Service, then they should automatically be registered to vote at the same time. There's no doubt about that. So then the question is, what about women? Howie Hawkins?
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think it's so new that Manchin's pursuing this. He's been talking all along that he wanted a bipartisan bill. And now he's got a pared down bill that's got a lot of good things in it with some Republicans on board. His problem is he doesn't have 10, so he can get closer. So then the question is, what happens next? And the reporting I've been hearing from people, you know, reporters in Washington, in the Capitol, and, you know, reporting on the president are saying the Democrats are resigned to getting a symbolic vote and then making it a campaign issue in 2022. The question is Manchin going to say, okay, I'll compromise on a filibuster maybe for just this bill, say 55 or a talking filibuster or one of those things. But he hasn't made a clear indication on that. So anyway, that's where I think how we got to where we are now.
Well, I saw an interesting piece. You know, he's from West Virginia, as was Robert Byrd. And when Robert Byrd was a senator, the filibuster was 67. And Byrd brought it down to 60. So Manchin maybe will bring it down to 55. I don't know. There's also discussion we touched on earlier. Can we make it a money bill and get it through reconciliation? Now, I think Dorothy Reich mentioned earlier that if you do that, you screw other legislation, which, you know, infrastructure stuff, which really is heavy on the money, but which is also scheduled to go through on reconciliation. Apparently, the rule is you can only do that twice. But, you know, they could give this money dimensions. It then has to be paid for. There's a complication in there, but they could get it through reconciliation. And then maybe that would happen. So, you know, it's an interesting dynamic. We're far from totally out in the cold here. And Manchin has obviously been reached by some people and obviously has an agenda that's not a total blackball agenda here. Justin LeBlanc.
Hello. So the other part I wanted to give an answer on the computerized redistricting, that can be done in a way that is bipartisan. However, it most often is not. One, you have to have qualified people doing it. Two, the places that it has been done have not been bipartisan in general, and it usually takes a major many-year effort to overturn a map that's been created to actually prove that it has a bias. So I still support independent redistricting commissions as much as possible.
Well, certainly, I'm sure we all do, but even a computer-generated whatever on the federal level will be preferable to what they've got in, say, Georgia, Texas, Florida, you know, all these other horribly gerrymandered states. I did see a piece today. There are a number of commissions. I think it's Oregon, Virginia, and Colorado all have a modified redistricting, and there's serious conflicts going on inside the Democratic Party about how these are being handled. And I'm not clear on the detail. We'll have to talk about that in July, but there's a lot of heat going on among the Democratic legislatures and their governors in those three states where they're very unhappy about how the redistricting is being handled, even though they supposedly have the upper hand. Now in Ohio, my understanding is that there was a redistricting sort of modification that was done to make the gerrymandering slightly less egregious, but it requires convening this commission, and the governor won't convene it. He's a Republican, Mike DeWine, and he's resisting convening this ungerrymandered commission. So we're all over on the map on this, but we're gonna have to do some research. And Mike Fox, since you're out there, you know, on the hustings, we got to get to the bottom of what Manchin is proposing here and see if some of these modifications are really worth fighting for and how we might be able to get them through the Congress. The other question is, instead of doing this with a great big omnibus bill, the For the People Act, why couldn't there be bills to do some of these things specifically in a micro way? Why couldn't there be a separate bill, which God knows we wanted for a long time, to make Election Day a national holiday? I mean, that would be a huge step forward just on its own. Same with automatic voter registration, with early voting, 15 days of guaranteed, federally guaranteed early voting. That would be enormous. And why couldn't we do that with a separate bill? And the clarification on addresses for the indigenous and homelessness. I mean, all these things, the photo ID, getting rid of the photo ID with a federal bill, that would be huge. So maybe we ought to think about a strategy of getting the For the People Act broken up and passed piecemeal. Has anybody ever thought on that? Jason, you've got a hand again? Are you, Jason, you're lit up. Do you not want to speak? Does anybody else want to speak to that before we move on?
Yeah, I can, Harvey. Mike Fox.
Okay, Mike, go ahead.
There is most definitely discussion of that. But as you bring up on this call, there are 417 different approaches to this. So the key for us, what I'm trying to reinforce here with this call is the way we get to that is by screaming For the People Act, For the People Act, For the People Act. If it goes down in flames tomorrow, filibuster, 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 no, we want the For the People Act just over this recess to provide, one would argue, Manchin some, in this regard, it's not only pressuring Manchin, but it also gives him cover. And it also gives him leverage with those remaining Republicans who, I'm sorry, gang, I'm a McConnell believer in this process. I don't see him getting to 10, but let's just say he can. Great. One of the ways that we ensure that he gets to 10 is by us being, I don't want to call it the extreme, but definitely the most aggressive, progressive voice in this and saying, no, you got to vote for it, guy, and you got to end the filibuster and give those tools some oxygen during the next recess. And then once that recess is over, we see, all right, have we gotten it to the point where we can break the filibuster on it? Great, boom, it goes through. And then we can address some of the current concerns. Like Howie, I agree with you wholeheartedly on some of the financing concerns, et cetera, et cetera. We can go back and fix those. Or if there isn't air in the room for a for the people approach after this huge wave of support for that, then great. We can piecemeal it. We can go to Manchin, you know, blah, 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 blah. But the short term is all about solidarity in a simple message that the American public can grasp. As soon as we start getting into bits and pieces, the average American voter starts their eyes glazing over.
Okay. Okay. Good point. Anybody else want to speak to that?
Sluggo, it's Mike Hirsch here. I just want to echo and amplify what my colleague Mike Fox has said. I've been party to a lot of negotiations up on Capitol Hill. I wish Joel were here because he could first person a lot of this. But the way this works is you don't go into a negotiation bargaining against yourself. You don't start to anticipate what the other side is going to be able to knock you off of doing. You go in hard, you go in strong, and you go in with a lot of resolution, and you make them fight and claw tooth and nail for everything that you back off of. And you do not go in negotiating against yourself. The Republicans will keep moving the goalposts. And that's what happened with Obama on a lot of his proposals. They got watered down and we ended up not getting what we needed.
Okay. All right. Very good. Let's move on. Charles Moreland, and then Ray McClendon and Gloria Tanubu. Charles, you want to speak to where DC statehood fits in with this and how we're moving ahead for our late August rally?
Yeah, first, let me let everybody know that there's a hearing tomorrow, June 22nd, the U.S. Senate Homeland Security and Government Affairs hearing tomorrow at 10 a.m. So we want everybody who can to show up tomorrow. If you're near Washington, D.C., we're having a rally that starts at 8:30 in the morning. Of course, we need as much help as we can. Another thing I want to report is that, you know, I'm just totally disturbed that the committee has decided not to allow DC's two senators to testify. That's insult added to injury as far as we're concerned. And it shows a total disrespect for the desires and will of the people of the District of Columbia. But that is because we are totally disenfranchised and the Congress, the House, I mean, the Senate especially now cares nothing about democracy in DC. The good news though is that we are moving forward with the Dream March on Washington for statehood, green jobs and justice, which is gonna be August the 28th in commemoration of the historic 1963 March on Washington for jobs and justice, jobs and freedom. We are very pleased to have with us today Franklin Garcia, a former U.S. representative, in fact, the last elected United States representative for the District of Columbia. And I'm going to ask Franklin to give us an update on the applications for the licenses. And we also blessed to have Shelley online. And so we want to introduce Shelley Franklin. She's going to be taking over the job of really mobilizing and organizing the efforts to get the venues approved and set up. Franklin, are you there?
Oh, I am. And thank you so much, Charles, not only for letting me to say a few words, but also mentioning the hearing that's taking place tomorrow on something so important to over 700,000 Washingtonians here. But as Charles said, we're excited about moving forward with our Dream March for DC Statehood, Green Jobs and Justice. That'll take place on the 28th. And what we're hoping is that we can get a lot of people excited about DC Statehood. There's momentum going on right now, and we're hoping that we can inject some more energy. So we're going to during the weekend of that, the 58th anniversary of the March on Washington, we're going to be holding a number of events to include a rally downtown in Washington, D.C., and then we're going to go to the ground to the U.S. Capitol, and we're going to have our veterans there also having a rally, and we're going to end it up the next day with a breakfast. So we're just very excited about what's going on. So please save the date. March 28th is going to be that date. And I think Shelly is online. If you want to just say hi, Shelly.
Shelly?
I am here.
Great.
Good afternoon. Good evening, everyone. Just say a quick hello. Shelly Rice, working with the Dream March. We have a lot of work to do. So.
Great. I want to say also, Charles, Joel and I had a discussion earlier, and I think what we may want to do, there'll be a dinner of sorts. Charles, you'll tell us about that on the 27th. The 28th is Al Sharpton is having a gathering, and we're going to be part of that. 29th, we'll also be there. And then on the 30th, which is Monday, and Flavi, I'm hoping Greenpeace will be involved in this. We want to deliver a solar panel, at least one solar panel, maybe more, to the White House. Have a little a gathering maybe in Lafayette Park and bring over the hardware. And if they'll let us, we'll go up and put them on the roof. That would be fun. But we want the White House to be totally solarized. There was one panel on the White House when Jimmy Carter was president. It was actually for hot water, not electricity, but we could, there are three different things we could deliver: a solar electric panel, a solar water heating panel, and a battery. But that we'll probably do on Monday, the 30th of August. So it's a 4-day, a stretch of events. And Charles, and we're really looking forward to that, to tie in all these issues. Tatanka, did you have a hand?
Tatanka, yeah, I wanna say, this just came through, but Charles, I want to get you in touch with Chase Ironize, who's going to be in DC late Wednesday into the weekend. He's going to do his show, which he has now, which is called Cut to the Chase. And it's going to be a lot of people working on the march. And every year they have a horse that comes in for Leonard Peltier. But I just asked him if he has room for you, if you could get out, you want to be on that, that broadcast. It goes live at 7 p.m. Eastern time Thursday, and then is on YouTube. So I just want to let you know. We'll talk afterwards.
Okay, thank you.
Harvey, I want to let everybody know that Tatanka has been so helpful. We're also planning something that we haven't talked a lot about, but we are planning an effort to boycott, what we call a boycott for statehood, Green Jobs and Justice. Tatanka and I have been working on that. We're also, Harvey, as you said, we're going to extend this, and Franklin will be somewhat surprised by what I'm saying. We're going to extend this to Monday. And the reason for that is because I want everybody to understand, we're not just marching to march. We're marching to organize, to begin a full effort to resolve these justice and green earth issues, and the crisis circumstances of COVID-19, cataclysmic climate change, and a global sense of gloom and doom shapes the urgent tone of this March on Washington. So we're gonna follow that up with a round table and meet with all the leaders that are gonna be in place. And so we're looking for some dramatic and meaningful results out of this march.
Absolutely. We want everything to be concrete and have tangible outcomes to look at. Charles, Franklin, is there more you want to talk on this before we go to Ray McClendon and Gloria Tinubu and then to Ray Lutz with a report from Arizona? Anything you want to add to that?
Let me ask that. I want everybody to go on our website. I posted it and I'll post it again. And sign up if you have an organization. We're going to start listing the organizations who will sign up as supporters tomorrow. We also have a link to sign up as volunteers. If you signed up as a volunteer before, please go online again, because once we updated the site, unfortunately, we lost a lot of the volunteers. So we need volunteers, and we need the organizations who are going to support us to sign up, and we'll start listening on the site beginning tomorrow.
Okay, everybody, you want to stay on and